This is Distraction Therapy, a podcast from Rob Watson. Conversations about how we're coping at a time of change. Hello, it's Rob Watson here, and I've come out on Saturday the 20th of March for another of the Leicester Soundwalks, and this is going to be more of a sit down and listen rather than walk and listen type thing. I'm just coming to Leicester City Centre, and there's quite a few people about. I think the mild weather and the prospect of easing of the lockdown is now encouraging people to get out and get some fresh air. So what I'm going to do for a little while is just wander about and see if we can get a sense of how life is returning. It's been a while since I think I've seen so many people sitting in this town centre, and with the cafes and restaurants closed, it means that people are buying food and coming out and sitting eating together, and actually that's quite pleasant. At the moment, I'm stood in what's called Green Dragon Square, which is where the old Leicester Market, indoor market, used to be. It was demolished a few years ago and redeveloped, and there are plans to kind of open it up a little bit and kind of encourage more people to use it as a public space. We'll be right back.
velvet raincoat. Where are you tonight? Cheap purple baby doll dress, a gardenia in your hair. Much taller and stronger than me, a forbidden dream, a dream.
Standing at Leicester Market again. One of the projects I'm working with and on at the moment is related to the census. It's called Leicester Stories, and either you're listening to this on Census Day or close to Census Day, you know, it's a challenge to make sure that everybody completes the census. And while the government and the Office for National Statistics is doing a really major push on filling in the census digitally, and I've done mine, it takes about 10-15 minutes. It's not very complicated. There's not really many difficult questions, but it's fairly straightforward. And the idea is to think what it is that kind of gives people a bit of pride in undertaking the census. What is it that people want to celebrate in their communities, and how is that expressed in people's own voices rather than it being, if you like, led by a centralised marketing campaign done by a mass media communications agency. And it's a bit more about how we directly use our community assets and the voices within our communities to represent ourselves and to speak on our own behalf, rather than having our thoughts and feelings expressed for us by distant agencies who are maybe interested in different things than we are ourselves. So it's an interesting process, and one of the first reflections on the process has been that there's a hesitancy, I think, not just to, you know, the vaccine. That people talk about vaccine hesitancy, there's an opinion hesitancy that what it is that people are expected to do when you ask them to contribute, you know, a vox pop, you know, an awful phrase that is used on television news and radio news, where you just go out into the street and talk to people and it's uncontextualised and it doesn't explain anything. But opinions are not really what we're interested in. It's a question of experience and how our experience informs our reasons. And what we think, rather than following instructions, we feel that it's better to explore this in the way of guidance. And one of the interesting things that's come out from some of the feedback has been some communities, particularly we were talking to some people in an African community group, And they said, you must emphasise the fact that you'll get a £1,000 fine. It's the law that you've got to complete this. Start with the stick and not with the carrot. And we'd started off with the carrot, thinking, oh, what are all the nice ideas and the positive reasons for people filling it in? So it's interesting that when you start to figure through what the different cultural expectations are of the census and what role it plays in society and how the information is used, it's kind of fascinating to start to try and understand and put yourself in the position of somebody else, where you drop your assumptions, where you're not really relying on the kind of beliefs and opinions that you've accumulated over the years. But what you're doing is you're listening to what it is that people are actually telling you. And people don't necessarily tell you in easy ways to listen. Often there's a bit of frustration, or there's a bit of anger, or there's a bit of resentment, can be ahead, or a bit of overexcitement can be ahead of what people are actually trying to express. But once you give people a sense of acknowledgement that what you're going to do is treat them fairly, treat them kindly, treat their experiences with respect, and that it becomes and it will be used as something which is part of a respectful process of engagement, then it really makes a difference to the kind of trust that you can build up. And there's certainly some issues at the moment around the vaccine take-up and the communication during the lockdown, that it's been, it hasn't been a shining success. You know, along with test and trace, I think we're need to include in the inquiry when that finally comes a whole section on communications policy and how the kind of top-down, centrally driven, narrowly focused communications model has not really served as well. And here in Leicester, we've had the longest lockdown of anywhere in the country, and we have some of the more complex issues of communicating with people in multiple languages, people from different faith groups, people from different generations, and you can't make assumptions about what's going to work and what does. You know, people have quite low English literacy skills because English isn't their first language, and simple things can confound you when you're not a native English speaker. You know, the subtle differences between there and there, you know, it's try explaining that to people. It's very difficult and very complicated. Where and where, you know, they all sound the same, but they mean different things. And so if you're not a great English listener or speaker and you're not a great English reader, then just getting a form through the door with some instructions to go onto a website might not be the easiest way to encourage people to complete it. And there's also a sense that, you know, sometimes people just see another letter comes through the door. It's marked to the householder, so you kind of think it's a bit of junk mail. So the essential communications get missed. Because there's so much junk mail, certainly where I live, there's, you know, small terraced houses. It's easy to circulate. You know, a couple of times a week we're getting pizza, takeaway menus, restaurant menus, double glazing, house sales, and it's like it takes away the moment when an important letter comes through the door. It takes that moment away. We're awash with this kind of information, and maybe we need to step back from it and kind of think about what we should prioritise. And maybe around the time of a census, all that kind of direct marketing maybe needs to stop. And maybe we should have stopped it during the period of the lockdown as well for the health communications. But I think there's an awful lot that we can go into and think about. And I think one of the things I'm enjoying with these sound walks is that it kind of gives you an opportunity to think through and to try and understand how what we hear and what we listen to is not quite as straightforward. And as I develop these over time, I really need to drop the kind of standard process and not rely on, and kind of be a bit more creative about it. And as I am hoping to meet up with other people, then at some point in the future. But
thank you.
Now, I've just spotted an information board, which is just outside the Corn Exchange. So the marketplace is situated on the Corn Exchange building. And I'm going to go over and see what information it tells us. Never pass up a good information board on a sound walk. So the Leicester Corn Exchange is a distinctive city landmark. It was originally built as a place of dealing in grain in 1850. The ground floor was designed by William Flint, whilst the upper floor, bridge and clock tower were added by F.W. Ordish 5 years later. Ordish's design was criticised at the time, but today the Corn Exchange is a source of civic pride. Its distinctive Venetian style bridge or exterior staircase is often referred to as the Bridge of Sighs. Many Victorian towns built corn exchanges in marketplaces for farmers and merchants to trade corn, grain, to trade corn and grain to meet the demand for food created by the expanding urban population. These buildings were often unsuccessful as traders preferred to use local inns, and the importation of grain from America reduced usage still further. Leicester's Corn Exchange continued to be used for civic and judicial functions, however. The Corn Exchange provided a distinctive central point in Leicester due to its size and the fact its external staircase could act as a podium. It was used for a range of important meetings and occasions. Ramsay MacDonald used it for canvassing in the election of 1906, and a service to mark the coronation of George V was here held in 1911. In 1931, the Hosiery Union used the Corn Exchange to broker a solution to the strike by the Wolseley hosiery workers.
The words of love are not enough, though sweet as wine, as thick as blood, passionless moments. And we are homeless out on the street. But life is cool and things aren't bad. Got what he wants, lost what he had. He soon adjusted and got accustomed to these new ways. Blame such sweet rhythm and blues. Strange days, she said to me, being in love don't mean you're free. But night reveals what daytime hides. Who lingers on? Who sleeps outside? The soft seduction, strong attraction somewhere downtown. A junkie's song, a dancer's knees. The laws of chance, strange as it seems, take us exactly where we most likely need to be. Exactly where we most likely need to be. Ah, 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 ah.
One of the things that's been done differently about the census this year is compared to 2011 is that in Leicester, the census team has been increased from, I think it's something like a half-time manager for the city and county, and a couple of half-time regional helpers. This time in Leicester, the Office for National Statistics have got a full-time engagement manager and a team of five full-time engagement managers just for the assistants, just for the city. And that is really pushing the census through this year, because they realise that some of the core groups that are, one of the hardest groups for the census to reach at the moment has been the student population, and particularly during the pandemic that's difficult, but because of the way that students live in shared accommodation and they are in flats and apartments, that kind of thing, then it's harder to identify, if you like, a household. And then also the ethnic minority groups in the centre are difficult or easy to overlook and difficult to reach sometimes, there actually is a sense of solidarity amongst those groups there. Means that there are people who are prepared to champion and advocate as trusted leaders within those communities that people should complete the census, and so the word gets around. But there are the outlying estates with the, if you like, the outlying white working class population doesn't have the same sense of and networks that gives it a sense of social solidarity, so they're harder to reach. And there's a lot of assumptions made about capability and capacity for things like digital engagement, which are defined by a fairly middle class kind of point of view rather than by actually looking at what the difficulties are in overcoming some of the obstacles about digital engagement. But the census will follow up with paper. The process is everybody fills the census in on the 21st, and then there'll be follow-on calls. So those areas where there's a low uptake of the census, that's when the door knocking starts to take place and asking people to complete the census as on a paper version, if they've not done so on a electronic version at that point. And with the pandemic, that just makes it a little bit harder to do that. So the Leicester Stories project, we're going to carry on talking about the census, even though everybody else will be thinking that the census is over, actually that's when the work begins, and that's when you're trying to reach into the parts of our communities that have not got the message. You know, it's assumed to some extent by government and by public authorities that people by and large listen to the BBC, watch the commercial television and radio stations, but that's not the case. I can't remember the last time I watched the BBC. Maybe some stuff on the iPlayer. I don't watch BBC News, and I don't watch the commercial. I don't listen to commercial radio. I'm more likely to listen to things on Bandcamp or iTunes and streaming services. And so the whole kind of idea of an integrated public service, public media network has shifted. And you're as likely to be watching satellite channels from India or Africa or China as you are likely to be watching YouTube or gaming channels. So using Twitch, is it? And you know, kind of interacting with, if you're a gamer, you're as likely to be having conversations with people on chat channels through gaming applications. So the whole kind of structure of our media ecology has really shifted, and it's not as straightforward as it once was. And there's still a sense that people think of these things as being set as they were in maybe the 1980s, and that the process of communication, because there are still some sizable numbers watching some or listening to some sizable public service stations and networks, but actually the kind of the outside of that, there's been a massive fragmentation. I listen to podcasts, I listen to online radio stations from around the world, rather than listening to the local news station. So that presents us with a real challenge. And you know, a lot of our media these days has lost its connection with those local things. And one of the things with the Leicester Stories Challenge, we've had really interesting is what makes Leicester sound like Leicester, and as opposed to a generic place or a generic community, you know, town or city in the UK, what makes Leicester stand out? And by and large, it's not easy. Well, actually, there's two things for me that I've learnt through doing these sound walks. One is the market. It's the obvious one, but sitting near the clock tower, as I was doing a few minutes ago, it's, you know, the range of voices that you hear, the range of languages spoken, the range of accents, and that's, you know, that's the key defining feature for Leicester, is that it is this very mixed community. It's not a rainbow. It's not an integrated sense of engagement with one another. It's often very siloed, and you know, what's the common experience? Well, at the moment we don't have that common experience because the shops and the pubs are pretty much all closed. So there's hardly a reason for people to come into the city from outside of the city. So what's the common experience? It really makes us think about what that creative, cultural common experience might be, and how we can draw on each other's experiences. And I think that's kind of the intention of what we're trying to do with the Leicester Stories project, but hopefully we'll be able to share a bit more about that in the future.
There's your cup.
It's been more of a mooch around and stand around rather than a walk today, but that's okay. If you want to get involved in one of these sound walks, and as we come out of lockdown, I'm hoping to meet up with different people, trying to listen to what the city's like from a different perspective, just get in touch with me. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at RobWMedia. Or you can email me at rob@robwatsonmedia.net. This is going to go out in three ways. A podcast, if you look for Decentered Media, it's up on there. And it's going to go out on Leicester Community Radio and on Sound Art Radio. it's a real challenge to... I think the lockdowns, we're in that in-between position where nothing's quite happening yet. And although the spring is emerging and the daffodils are now out, people's kind of coming out of their homes and needing to interact and circulate is really, you know, you can feel it. And we just really have to still be very careful when we're out. The message about wearing masks seems to have fallen down the wayside, and yet the masks and washing your hands using sanitizer are still one of the principal ways of slowing transmission. I'm due to get my vaccine this evening, and hopefully I got booked in for that through the NHS app. That just takes away some of the worry of the pandemic, and I think a lot of people are feeling a little bit, you know, hopefully feeling a little bit confident. So it'll be interesting to try and kind of track that through the coming months. So any thoughts that you've got that you want to share, you know, any experience that you've had about the lockdown, that, you know, just get in touch, and we'll arrange to meet up for a socially distant wander, mooch, maybe grab a coffee while we're doing it. Usually takes about half an hour to an hour, so it's a nice way to get away from the desk and get some fresh air as much as you can in a city that is surrounded by traffic. But I've moaned about that enough in the past. You've been listening to the Distraction Therapy Podcast with me, Rob Watson. If you want to get in contact, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Rob W Media, or visit the website robwatsonmedia.net.